Welcome, all of you wine and true crime lovers. I'm Brandy, and this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, for this week's episode, Murder in Littlefield. Tonight, I am enjoying Chris's chocolate cherry tort with cherry whip filling, and I am pairing this piece of heavenly dessert with the wine from Chateau Wright. This is a dessert wine, a semi-sweet red blend, and y'all, it was absolutely delicious. I am not one for sweet wine, but this wine is so good. It went perfectly with Chris's dessert. That recipe will be up on Patreon by the end of this week. There is still time to order these amazing wines from Chateau Wright at a discount by using the code WINEANDCRIME at checkout. You will save 10% on your entire order. And if you're a Patreon member, your code is on Patreon, and that gives you 10% off and free shipping. If you have questions about their wine or need recommendations, just give me a shout and let me know. But you will hear from James Smith himself from Chateau Wright during the wine recess. This week, we are discussing the murders of Roy and May Hunt out of Littlefield, Texas. Littlefield is, well, little. So the one fact you should remember is that Littlefield is the home to one of my favorites, Waylon Jennings. His brother owns a store in town, and he decided to make part of that store a museum tribute to his late brother about his musical career. Chris and I stopped on our way home from Freona, Texas, so if you're ever near Littlefield, it's worth the stop. In May 1942, local news spread quickly about the attempted murder of a prominent Littlefield physician who had been shot twice along a highway in Lubbock. Dr. Roy Hunt survived this attack, and the doctor identified a Central Texas doctor as the one who pulled the trigger. Roy Hunt survives the attack, goes to police, and identifies the person who just tried to kill him. This Central Texas doctor is identified as Dr. Billy Newton. Now, at the time, Dr. Newton and his wife, Ruth Newton, were living in Cameron, Texas, which is located in Central Texas. Now, Roy Hunt tells the police that evening, May 21st, 1942, he and his wife were entertaining friends playing bridge at their home. They're drinking, eating, just having fun. Then he receives three telephone calls summoning him out to various locations on Clovis Road. Now, this is about 1 a.m. So it has to be someone, right? We assume that he would know or that needed help. Once he arrived, Hunt said that a person he ended up naming as Newton stepped from behind the car and fired at Hunt. He hits him in the abdomen and again in the shoulder. So even though it's dark outside, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, Hunt escapes and he's running through a plow field and eventually just hides. He's able to hide. And the person who made those three phone calls is Billy Newton's wife, Ruth Newton. So the Newtons allegedly ended up searching for Hunt for a while before returning to their car and driving away from the scene. Dr. Hunt also would testify that he had not seen Dr. and Mrs. Newton for a number of years and that he knew of no reason why Dr. Newton would want to kill him. Dr. Newton would testify that he was hundreds of miles away heading for Houston when the incident occurred. Dr. Newton was tried and convicted of attempted murder. This took place in Alton, Texas. Newton received a 7-year sentence. In 1944, the State Court of Criminal Appeals ordered a new trial for Dr. Newton on the grounds that a delay had been denied the defendant. Now, in the second trial, Dr. Newton is again convicted in 1947. Now, he's convicted of assault. So throughout his trials, and even after his second conviction, he denied any involvement in the attempted murder of Dr. Hunt. So I'm sure you're thinking, why would he leave this party at 1 a.m. and meet Ruth Newton? Well, what comes to find out is that Hunt and Newton went to medical school together. And unbeknownst to them, they were both dating Ruth at the same time and had no idea. Now, this is when they're both in medical school. Ruth is a nursing student nearby. And it said that she was actually very much in love with Roy, but he wasn't ready to get married. So she ends up dating and marrying Billy. And now it's time for a wine recess. So I told you, friends, at the beginning of the episode that we had a special guest on with us today. As you know, we have been sharing Chateau Wright's wine over the last few episodes. We can't say enough about it. I think, you know, we were tasting the reds and we were tasting the white, and you guys just have to, you got to try it. This is in a beautiful, beautiful part of Texas. Chris and I cannot wait to go. Well, Chris can't wait to go back. He has said he has been through there several times, but now we know about the winery. And so we can't wait to come visit. I have winemaker James Smith with me, who we've been talking, James, since the beginning. You sent us this wine so we could tell all of our listeners about it. So welcome to Texas Wine and True Crime, finally. And thank you so much for sharing your wine with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So tell us, what is Chateau Wright? How did it get started? You know, just tell us whatever you'd like about Chateau Wright.
Sure. So it began with a couple friends. It's Jack Wright and Adam White. Jack's the visionary. He's a big picture guy. Adam makes, he's the main winemaker and grape grower. And I assist in the winemaking process, the grape growing process, and mostly though in the like sales, marketing, and, just kind of leading us in a bunch of different directions. We're doing it. Ton of events all over Texas, so it's you can't necessarily just stumble upon us out there where we're at. I mean, you can, but you have to want to be out there in the first place,
which makes me even more excited, James.
so we're sitting out in the Davis Mountains, so it's the mountainous part of Texas, which, you know, doesn't look like anywhere else in Texas. I've traveled around, and yes. It's closer to that New Mexico feel. So we're sitting at about 5,400 feet above sea level. We're a little bit higher than Denver, so the alcohol does hit a little bit harder. If you're walking up hills, you're gonna feel it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, we don't. It doesn't look that high when you're there, but you gradually start going up a couple thousand feet at a time on the way out west.
Wow.
So our vineyard, yeah, it sits on about 40 acres. We've got about 18-ish planted right now. And we're producing, we're growing the grapes, we're producing the wine, we're hand bottling it out there on the estate.
Wow. Well, here's another thing I love about your wines. There's not like a million of them, right?
Right.
I love that you have such a small selection. It makes my life really easy and other people's lives when they're like, you know, which one do we try? I don't know. But, so tell us a little bit briefly about your blends. You know, what are you known for? What do people like when they come to visit you? You do have a tasting room.
Yes.
So tell us what people really come there for.
So, you know, people are out in the area, usually hiking or visiting Fort Davis or Marfa, Alpine. There's a ton of events all around the area. Terra Lingua is pretty close to us too. I mean, relatively, it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours from us. So usually people know us by the red blends. We kind of emulate Chateauneuf-du-Pape. That's kind of the goal for one of our owners. He loves Rhone varietals. He loves French blends. And the Chateauneuf-du-Pape region is what he'd like to recreate. So it's just it's a huge blend of red and white grapes together. And it kind of just explodes in your mouth. It's got a ton of flavor. There's a lot of complexity, but it's not too tannic. It's not too acidic. It's not sweet. It's got a lot going on. So we make a variety of different things out there. We do like little offshoots. So we grow, there's an orchard nearby. So we do like a cider with their apples. There's a nearby honey producer. So we use this honey to make a mead. And then we also do whites, rosés, single varietal reds, mostly red blends, and then we'll have a couple sweet here and there. Sweet, but not super sweet. We do sweet our way.
Yeah, and the sweet one that we had that you sent was the dessert wine, which at the beginning of the show, we talked about what Chris paired with that wine. And I need to know about that 2019 on your website.
Yeah, so the Liev, it's probably one of the ones we're most known for. Most of the other Texas winemakers that have tasted it, or just wine nerds in general, they kind of geek out on it. It's so 2019, we got hit by two hailstorms back to back. We had just finished pruning, so it kind of knocked off about 80-90% of what we would normally get from those grapes or the vines. So we had super limited production. I think we did through the whole vineyard, we kind of tossed them all together. We got about 120 cases total.
Wow.
Normally we're struggling to find what to put that volume in. So we're looking for a blend to blend it into, or we're going to make a single varietal, but the entire vineyard was just that. So we kind of threw it together. It was kind of a bummer year. So we had a real small production. We've co-fermented everything together. So we threw them all together instead of separating them and just kind of forgot about it. We threw it into barrels. I think it was 5 barrels total. And we didn't even think about it for a couple of years.
Wow.
So when we went to do barrel tastings one time, we were all out there, both the owners and myself, and then he had a couple friends come out. So we pulled a couple pitchers out because we figured that it was going to be okay, but we weren't going to really use it for much. And after the 5th or 6th pitcher, we were like, we need to switch to something else because we knocked those out in about 45 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. And James, we've been giving a discount to the listeners. Listeners, I hope you have been using this code, Wine and Crime, 10% off when you go to their website and order wine. Okay, because James, I'm going to be utilizing that code. And can I throw a bottle of that in my order? And use that code? Awesome.
Yeah, we priced it kind of high because one, we didn't make a lot of it. And then two, we kind of wanted to see how it would age over the years.
Okay.
We had bottled it January 2021. And I think we're down to like 25 cases now.
Oh my gosh.
It moved a lot faster than we were expecting. So, I mean, there's a decent amount left, but there's not that much left.
Well, I like to splurge on on things like that, right? Like a good varietal and something different. We always like to bring, let people know that, we have some really great wines we taste here in Texas, and they're not expensive. But when you can find something that just you didn't make a lot of, right, which is totally understandable with the price. But it's a perfect splurge. And honestly, I'm like thinking this is going to be my new year wine. I'm ordering this for myself to bring in after the new year and drink that in January. Okay, so when is your tasting room open? Are there areas, are there places to stay by there? How many people can you fit in your tasting room? Can we have a big event, Texas Wine and True Crime event there? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we actually did a grand opening literally the week before COVID. So most of the tasting room was designed to be outdoors anyway, because the views out there are fantastic. So we're in the middle of building an indoor area right now as well. That's maybe like a month or two out at the most. But we've hosted a bunch of different events. We were part of Viva Big Bend out there. We did a couple events. We host events pretty much almost every month on the patio. I think we can fit up to, with standing room, probably about 200 people.
Oh, that's a good size.
Yeah, so it's not huge, but it's not small either. So we usually have a live band at least once or twice a month come out and just hang, have a good time. to kind of keep everything going wine-wise, I ended up opening our food truck. So we do have a food truck on site, and we do like upscale grilled cheese, burgers, charcuterie boards, just different appetizers. We make most of the stuff in-house. So, and we're really well known for a lot of the food, especially the burgers. I've done a couple burger competitions in San Antonio, and then
what?
I just won a food competition in Dallas on November.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, so we're and on top of the wine's winning awards all over the place. And then we're also really well known for the food. So we had to really draw people to come out, because we're not, again, you can't just stumble upon us.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people think too, like if they haven't heard of it, or, you know, see, that's really why I wanted to start doing Texas Wine on this show, is because there are so many wineries and great wine and places like where you are in the most mountainous area of Texas. I can't imagine the views that you probably have from that in that vineyard. I mean, it's gorgeous. And I was telling James and the listeners that Chris, I don't need to twist his arm to go out there. I mean, I've had to convince him other places that I've wanted to go visit, but that is his jam, the Big Bend, like that's his, you know, New Mexico. When we went to Friona and just did that live show, we had to go into New Mexico just so Chris could get into New Mexico, even if it was just for the afternoon. So, James, we're going to come visit. I know our listeners are going to, when is the best time to come?
Literally, I mean, any time. So we're open every Friday through Monday. So we had to be open 4 days.
Okay.
And we're open basically from noon to sunset. So it kind of, our hours change throughout the year. So right now it's until probably about 6-ish. But during the summer, we really don't have sunset till about 9:30, 10 in the evening.
Wow. Do you get a big summer crowd?
Oh, it's, yeah, huge. Summer's pretty big, and then also after Labor Day is quite a lot. So September, October, right after the rainy season is probably a really good time. So our rainy season's July, August. Everything's bright green. It doesn't look like you're in the desert.
Oh my gosh.
And it kind of looks like you're in Ireland or Scotland.
What? Okay, James, I have never been there, and I've lived in Texas my whole life, and I can't believe, friends, and I know people are listening going, oh my God, that exists in Texas. So we need to go there and bring some listeners. Okay, well, we don't have anything really planned in September, October, so I think we're going to a couple of others in May and April, but James, I think you're going to see us probably in September or October, so...
Perfect.
Yeah. And listeners, you know, when we do events and we plan stuff, we always let you know about it, but please go to their website, check out their wines. You will not be disappointed. And this code is only going to last, I don't know, through maybe the next week. So get on there, try some wine. If you need suggestions and you don't remember what we've had over the last few episodes, reach out to me or Chris, and we will tell you about each blend, all the recipes we put with them. And James, I can't thank you enough for trusting us with your wine, letting us share it with everyone. I can't wait to come and look at this beautiful, beautiful vineyard. And I thank you again. It really meant a lot to us.
No, absolutely. Thank you guys. It's been awesome. Let's definitely do something in the fall, and then, check us out. And then also, if you guys follow us on Facebook and Instagram's probably the better one, but, we post all the events that we do. And, I usually try and keep everything updated within the next 3 months. So I'll give like January through March, all the events that we're going to do. And then so on and so on.
Perfect. Okay, guys, we'll follow them on social media. It's Chateau Wright. Get on their website, type in Wine and Crime to get your 10% off. James, thank you again. And we'll talk soon. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Awesome. Thank you as well.
On the morning of October 26, 1943, Roy and his wife, May, are found brutally slain in their tiny 5-room brick home in Littlefield, Texas. What made the murders more shocking was the discovery that their two daughters, aged 5 and 2, were in the home during the murders. This is just 17 months after the attempted murder on Roy Hunt. Now, after finding the battered and bloody bodies, law enforcement declares the double murder to be the most brutal and gruesome crime they have seen in the history of the South Plains. Now, Texas Rangers start to get involved in this case. You have local law enforcement, Texas Rangers. They're investigating these murders. And what they discover is horrifying. They are at the crime scene. Both victims were tied up with different materials. First, they were tied up separately, and then they ended up tied together. Now, Roy Hunt was shot at point-blank range. He died instantly, but they say May suffered for hours before dying. And she was tied to her husband this entire time as she's dying after being bludgeoned to death. Sadly, their bodies were found by their 5-year-old daughter. She ends up escaping and went to a neighbor's house for help. The 2-year-old is eventually found in the home by investigators. Both girls had been unharmed. Dr. Hunt was 36 years old at the time of his death, and his wife, May, was 26. Now, of course, the people of Littlefield are scared. This is a very, very small farming town. Who would kill this couple? Their daughters were known as, I think they were saying, like the princesses of Littlefield. He was a doctor. He had his practice there. Doors, they didn't lock their doors. They didn't lock their windows. They were locking their houses up. They were afraid. People who lived in Littlefield were afraid to venture out at night thinking they might be running into this killer. During the investigation, detectives discover multiple things. One thing they found out was the point of entry into the home, and that was through a back window in the children's nursery. So this person had to pass by their beds as they were sleeping in order to murder their parents. The investigators actually also find that it doesn't, you know, this only takes a couple of days. They're murdered on the 26th. On the 28th, there is a break in the case. So in those 2 days, these investigators and Texas Rangers are unraveling this web, right? Unraveling this tangled web of these murders. And they say everything leads back to the Newtons and another suspect, 49-year-old Jim Thomas. Now, Thomas has a criminal career dating back all the way to 1917 after a felony theft in Sweetwater. He also was serving and served a good time of this 25-year sentence in Nebraska for bank robbery. But it only took authorities hours to establish that Thomas was in Littlefield at the time of the murders. So police start to tie this guy, Jim Thomas, to the area during the Hunt murders. Now, a man by the name of A.M. Veazey said that he had gone deer hunting and was out of town when the murders occurred, but he did allow Jim Thomas to stay at his home, which was attached to a garage, or like they used to call them filling stations, like gas stations. So he's staying in that room. Veazey also said that after he returned from his hunting trip, he was concerned when he heard about the murders that Thomas may have had something to do with the crime. So he ended up tossing a pistol from his house into a lake, the river, I'm not sure, but he threw it into the water. He had also told authorities that he loaned his car to Thomas the night of the murders. So the investigation reveals that the tires on Veazey's car matched the tire tracks around the Hunt home. But they also said it looked like the two front tires had been switched. So if they're trying to compare the tires, they're not going to be able to do so. So they do believe that the two tires were actually switched on the car. Okay, so a tip comes in, and Thomas is located in Galveston, Texas. He is brought to Lubbock under heavy Texas Ranger Guard on October 28th, 1943. So, what is the motive? Still holding a grudge, police and Texas Rangers believe that Newton wanted to hire someone to kill the Hunts. Now, Jim Thomas, according to reports, never claimed to be anything but a killer. Thomas, like I mentioned, had a criminal record dating back all the way to 1917 with felonies, serving part of a 25-year sentence. It was said that he didn't drink, he didn't cuss, he didn't smoke, but he was a self-proclaimed killer. Thomas was charged with the Hunt murders in early 1944. Due to judicial errors and appeals in the courts, he was granted three trials, and this kept the case tied up in the courts until 1951. So you're talking 7 years later. He was sentenced to death twice and life in prison once, but he never served one day in jail for the murder of Roy Hunt and his wife. Texas never gets the opportunity to actually make a conviction. In August 1951, he is gunned down in Durant, Oklahoma. And I was thinking, we can now see how the judicial system has changed over the years, because a man being convicted three times of and convicted to death twice and life in prison once would not be hanging out in Oklahoma. So doesn't spend a day in jail. But why? Even if the motive is Newton finding this guy. Now, his wife, Newton's wife, Ruth, is never convicted of any crime. Nothing at all. And they never found any, I believe they couldn't find any tie to her and the presumed Jim Thomas killer of the Hunts. But it is said that Mr. Newton may have been jealous of the fact that, I don't know, did he find out she was really in love with Roy this whole time, and that Roy and her were, you know, she was in love with him and she wanted to marry him and he wasn't ready to get married. And then she marries her husband, who's also a doctor who went to medical school with Roy Hunt, but they didn't know they were dating each other at the same time, right? So does he now think she settled for him because Roy wasn't available? And even 6-7 years later, right? This is years after they're done with medical school. They've gone on and married and had children. And so did something come up? Did they have a fight? Did Ruth throw this in his face? And, you know, and then he learns out the truth, and that, and maybe there was a part of him that thought they still spoke or had some sort of connection even after they broke up. I mean, think about it. She wanted to marry Roy. So you would think his name would come up at some point. And did she spill the beans and tell her then husband that she was dating both of them at the same time while they were in medical school? Thomas's death likely eliminated the best chance of ever solving this murder. This is, you know, this is an unsolved murder case. It is considered unsolved since there was no prosecution. They never got to hear the evidence. Even though you may have the evidence that the Rangers and the police officers, but in a court of law, he was not officially found guilty and spending time in prison for that crime. He was out walking the streets in Durant, Oklahoma. And that is the murder of Roy and May Hunt, which remains officially unsolved, like I mentioned. But was it jealousy? Did something come out? Why would he want him killed after not seeing them for years and years? I seem to think that something was said and it was just And you know what? They were both doctors. Was one practice, you know, was his practice doing well in Littlefield? And he was in a very small town and well-respected. But then again, he was a doctor in Cameron, Texas, said to be well-respected. Not much information in his background that would lead us to believe that something like this would happen. But since the one thing that ties them together is his then wife dating both of them in medical school. If I was a betting woman, which I am, I would say that probably has something to do with this crime. Until next time, friends, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.